Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Well, life on the farm is kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy like me can't hack. Thoroughly to rise, early in a sack. I thank God I'm a country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm. Raising me a family and working on the farm. Days are all filled with an easy country charm. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Welcome to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today we take Route 51 to our favorite country trunk exit and take the gravel roads and dirt paths into farm country. And as we pass fields of corn, potatoes, soybeans, and ginseng, and pastures filled with dairy cows, we see fewer and fewer small family farms, and in their place, giant factory farms and milking operations, and often for sale signs and waiting bulldozers and excavators as the children of today's farmers move to the city and look for work that's more stable, more predictable, more financially rewarding, while the old homestead becomes the new subdivision. Our travels today also take us across Wisconsin to Menominee, Oconomowoc, Ashland, Menasha, Platteville, and Wausau, each a community where a public town hall meeting was held on the future of farming and rural life in our state. And after 30 months of listening to people across Wisconsin, that data has been compiled into a 238-page book that details where we are today and also contains 83 recommendations on where we need to go to preserve the healthy farm economy and rural landscape so vital to Wisconsin's identity. With us today, the co-chair of this ambitious project, Stan Grzynski, who is also the Director of Rural Leadership and Community Development at the UW Global Environment Management Center. Also, Keith Langenhan, a dairy farmer from Marathon, who is also chairman of the Marathon County Board of Supervisors and chair of the Wisconsin Counties Association Agricultural Steering Committee and of the National Association of Counties Agriculture and Rural Affairs Committee. Rounding out our panel of experts, Sandy Seiler, a dairy farmer from Mosinee, who's been at the forefront of advocacy for improvements in agricultural policy and rural life. As always, we invite you to join the conversation. You can reach us at 261-6371 or toll-free 1-800-780-9742. We especially want to hear from you if you're a farmer or a developer interested in land use issues. Those numbers again, 261-6371. Or 1-800-780-9742. Stan, Sandy, and Keith, thanks so much for being with us on Route 51.
Thank you, Glenn. Good
and
to
Stan,
be here.
Stan, you're the co-chair of this project. Why don't you tell us how you put this 238-page report that was just released a few weeks ago? How did you put it together? What kind of research went into it?
Well, let me say that about 3 years ago now, actually 2005, it would be, the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters put together a group of people to talk about what project they should next consider. They had finished up what was called the Waters of Wisconsin, which was a review of, well, the waters of Wisconsin, lakes, rivers, how we use them, recreation, and otherwise. They were looking for another project, and a number of people suggested to the Academy that they take a look at Wisconsin's rural landscape, everything from agriculture to education, health care, to get some sort of an idea, first of all, of what the state might look like 10, 20, 50 years down the road, but most importantly, to gather from citizens their reactions to that question and their concerns, the concerns that they had about why the state may or may not continue to be an agricultural state, or what sorts of policies should be put in place to ensure that we continue with our agricultural traditions, but also wisely use our natural resources.
Well, that's a tall order, and you know, as I said in the introduction, it took you 30 months to do this. What sorts of things were you doing during that period?
mostly organizing and putting together the public forums that you talked about, bringing people together so that we could get the call words were bring everyone to the table. We wanted a broad cross-section of the general public to attend these forums. We tried to do it in different areas of the state geographically, and we did. We tried to vary the times a little bit so people could participate, and we tried to set a theme for each of the forums. So if you felt strongly, for example, about education and healthcare, you could be at that forum and speak to it. But we were mostly interested in hearing people from the general citizenry, their perspective in terms of what the state looks like now, what they want it to look like down the road, and what recommendations they would have for policymakers to see that happen.
Keith Langenhan, you've got a unique perspective here. You're a dairy farmer in the Marathon area. You're also the chairman of the Marathon County Board of Supervisors, and you sit on some committees which make you kind of a leader on these issues, not just statewide but also nationally. Give me your perspective on this project.
Well, I think as we prepare and work for the next farm bill, I think we have to educate our citizenry that this is the first farm bill where we're actually working on that we are short of food. The concern today is not how much land we have to put in government programs and put out of production. It's getting to be more of a concern now as how much land can we keep in production in order to supply food for the people in the United States. And just coming back from Washington, D.C. last week, where our National Association of Counties Ag and Rural Affairs Steering Committee met, there's a lot of emphasis being put on producing fuel from agriculture and the price of what it's going to do to the price of food. So I think it's a very exciting time to be in agriculture, and I think we have to take a very close look at the future as far as conserving or preserving and do good planning for the land that's left. We'll never bring the land back where homes have been built on or the 40 acres spread out throughout the United States in small parcels, almost like Swiss cheese, where subdivisions have been put in. But now we have to work and strive to be able to have those people that are already out in the country and have fulfilled every American's dream of owning land in the country. But we have to make them aware that we do need agriculture, and they're going to have to live in an environment where agriculture activities are going on.
And throughout the years, the Farm Bill has always addressed things like taking land out of production or giving farmers money for not growing crops. Is it primarily because of the need for ethanol and biodiesel and other use of corn and other crops that we now find ourselves in this situation where there's not enough food?
Well, ethanol, there's no doubt, has probably had some impact on this. And I think another thing that's had an impact on it, there's more and more people using corn to heat their homes, and people don't even address that in the overall picture. I know four families that I know of this year that I sold all my excess corn to that used to heat their homes, where normally that got sold to the mill and got passed on to people that wanted to use it to feed animals.
Is that an efficient use of corn, or should we be getting our ethanol from some other source?
It's being researched. There is a lot of focus now being put on to probably produce an ethanol out of wood products and switchgrass, which will also put more pressure on agricultural land. They want to switch the production of ethanol to more cellulosic products. And we also learned last week that promoting the use of corn for fuel is going to actually speed up the global warming because it has an effect on the carbon cycle. So I think there will be a lot of research being done in the next few years, and there will be an emphasis put on producing fuel out of other products than just corn.
A lot of issues we need to look at. Let's get back to this report. Sandy Seiler, how were you involved in some of the research and work that went into it? I know you attended at least one meeting, and you're focused on some areas but not on others.
Yes, I was involved in the forum that was held in Menasha that had a focus on health care and part of a panel there. It was really interesting, especially now that I've had a chance to review the entire report, that the dynamic that came across from all the participants, that, of course, it seemed that land use issues was number one. No matter what the theme of the different forums, land use just came across as something that cut across all disciplines. But the second theme that was absolutely strong in, at every single forum was the issue of health care. And the question that seemed to come out of that is, what good is a world-class health care system if so many are not able to access that system? And coming particularly from the world of dairy, this has been a focus of mine for a long time. There's been a lot of research that shows that just because the numbers are small, it really is masked that there are a large number of people, population in this state, that are underinsured or uninsured. And ultimately, if this prevents them from staying in agriculture or even entering it, that then creates a loss of economic activity. That
you see a situation where a lot of farm families, somebody has to go out and get a job outside the farm just because it provides health care for the family?
Absolutely. And this was something that was talked about in depth. In fact, it diminishes the workforce on that family farm and may create a situation where the farm may not modernize just because the work pool is diluted. But a bigger issue that was really brought to light in great detail there, that many farm families, one or two, will work off the farm of the farm members to specifically get that insurance for the health care. And what is happening, more and more insurance companies, health insurance companies, have somewhere in the fine print an exclusionary clause that says if a family member is injured at work on the farm, they are not covered. It's a workman's comp issue. And research shows...
Do people even know that when they take out these health care policies?
Exactly. Research shows that over 80% of the farmers that are impacted in this way don't even know. So the word is, we're telling people, check your policy. And this is becoming more and more of an issue. And even there are many other states that now are requiring that their insurance companies cannot do that.
Farming is dangerous work. It would seem like healthcare companies would be reluctant to insure farmers.
Well, that seems at first blush that, and that is the reason that health insurance companies give, the reason for doing that. But what's come out of this, a lot of exciting work. There's some great healthcare initiatives, a local one in Shawano County called the Rural Health Initiative. We've got a state co-op, the Farmers Health Co-op, insurance plan that really talk about and have a emphasis on prevention. If farmers can access prevention services, they're going to stay healthier. Right now, most farmers, their insurance is so expensive, they take a high deductible, and so those prevention services, which 4 out of 5 farm families have no prevention services whatsoever, if they can't get those simple services, they may not be able to address some very simple health issues. So some of the new plans that are out there, this Farmers Health Cooperative, addresses that issue right up front. They provide a health screening assessment right up front when you join and provide $500 of first dollar prevention care. You get those services every year, and it's not out of the deductible.
And that's a very substantial problem facing the family farm, but it's just one of many. And we're going to be getting into all of these issues in great detail over the next 45 minutes, and we'd really like to hear from you. Our lines are open right now. If you've got an opinion on the future of the family farm, if you're a farmer and you're plagued by health care problems, if you worry about land use issues, you worry about whether or not you're going to be able to sell your farmland in the future, you worry about the push for planning, if you're a developer and you've got an interest in what the state is going to look like in the future, give us a call. Our lines are open at 261-6371, 261-6371. 1-800-780-9371 or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
For more information on regional programming for North Central Wisconsin here at Wisconsin Public Radio, or to have your community event listed with us, check out our local website at wpr.org/WLBL.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. If you've just joined us, we are talking about the future of the family farm in Wisconsin and our rural heritage. Our phone number is again 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. We've got an all-star panel, Stan Grzynski, who worked on this project for the past 30 months. Also, Keith Langenhan, who is a dairy farmer as well as a chairman of the Marathon County Board, and Sandy Seiler, a dairy farmer from the Mosinee area, who is a strong advocate for issues relating to the family farm and rural development in this state. Stan, a lot of this comes down to land use issues. How bad is the loss of farmland in Wisconsin? And I guess another question would be, how do you continue a $51 billion agricultural economy without a land base?
Well, interestingly enough, the people who came to many of the forums and testified showed that Wisconsin's production has remained about the same, both in terms of production units, milk production, those sorts of things. Where the atrophy has occurred is that we've lost a lot of the smaller and mid-sized farming units, and there are bigger farms now, much bigger farms. Where land use comes into play is that if you're going to have the same number of animals and you're feeding and milking and doing those sorts of things, you have to have a land base to work from. And it's with the encroachment of the urban and the suburban areas on rural areas, it reduces the amount of land that's available, first of all. And secondly, in many instances, and particularly we see this in southeast Wisconsin, although I'm sure Keith and Sandy can probably attest to it here, many times there's a gross lack of understanding between the agricultural community and the people who move into those communities looking for, well, frankly, a little piece of heaven in the countryside. And a lot of those things could be avoided if the state and local government would kind of come together and begin to look at what we need to do to ensure that we have adequate land, because it takes land for agricultural production. But at the same time, while we want to preserve land, we also want to respect people's investment in the lands. We want them to be able to sell those rights, farming rights, or the property ultimately, so they can get their investment out of it. But in order to do this, people have to come together with the idea that they're going to see their common interests and work toward the kinds of policies that will preserve agriculture, because it's so important for Wisconsin, assure livelihoods for those people who are connected with it, including those who take agricultural products and turn them into something, and while at the same time understanding that with a growing population, people need places to live and stay. But that takes planning. And the nice thing about this forum was that we didn't just address the diminishing nature of small and mid-sized agriculture. People talked more in general about the kinds of things that had to be done across the board to resolve some of this.
It does take planning, but efforts to plan and preserve rural space are under political attack in a lot of places. In Clark County, smart growth has come under attack from a number of local politicians who say, this interferes with my property rights. I own this property. I ought to be able to do whatever I want with it. They're saying, they want nothing to do with the planning, which is essential for implementing any of these recommendations in your report.
Well, Glenn, let me just say that things are the way they are for a reason. And any time people feel threatened, they're going to react they're going to react to it, and they'll react negatively to it. So if people are invested in real estate, or they're developers or otherwise, and they think that policies are under consideration that might restrict their way of making a living, they're going to resist it. Now, logically, you step back and you say, well, but there may be other ways for this individual or this group to continue to be a developer and make money without encroaching on farmland. And that's exactly the case. It can be that way. But people, when people have fear, their first reaction is to dig in and not change.
Well, let me hear from the politician here. Keith, you've got constituents in the Marathon area. You must have some who are skeptical of planning efforts and smart growth.
Well, I think back to our local township where I've been chairman the last 30-plus years. We adopted what was called exclusive ag zoning, a statewide program available approximately 25 years ago. And there certainly was a huge resistance. But now when the state legislature said that every municipality should have a smart growth or a land use plan by the year 2010, when we sent out surveys, when our Planning and Zoning Committee sent out surveys, over 70% of the people of our township responded to those surveys, which was an extremely high rate of return for a survey. And it was over 70% that said they didn't want any change in lot size. We require 35 acres for minimum lot size. They didn't want any change in that. There were even a few that commented we should raise it higher than 35 acres. They're very happy what they see happening in our township. And yes, there was a lot of political pressure at the time that we adopted it. Now we don't have near the pressure because people that are looking for land, when they hear about Town of Marathon, they go to other places around us. And we do have subdivisions in our township, but we've identified growth areas that we want to see those subdivisions or those housing units being put, but the general portion of our township is zoned exclusively.
So what do you say to your friends in Clark County and in other areas where smart growth has become a hot potato?
Well, I think that they're pretty much missing the boat. I think land use planning is very important for our future, and I think that the politicians that are doing a dance and not taking a stand on this thing should get serious and take a stand on it, because if they really want to look the future of the state of Wisconsin, Wisconsin heritage was built on agriculture, and I think that we see a huge need for it. It's a huge part of the Marathon County plan to the future.
All right. Well, we'll be talking about the future after we take this break for news. Keith Langenhan, Sandy Seiler, Stan Grzynski. We're talking about the future of farming on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
One night Farmer Brown was taking the air, locked up the barnyard with the greatest of care. Down in the hen house something stirred when he shouted, "Who's there?" This is what he heard: "There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So calm yourself and stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us."
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Gunter von Hagen's Body Worlds 1, the original exhibition of real human bodies, now open for a limited engagement at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Presented by Northwestern Mutual Foundation. Tickets 414-223-4676.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling. Voice was chanting as the fog was lifting. This land was made for you and me.
We're talking about the land on this edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, the future of the family farm in Wisconsin, land use planning, future of rural life. We want to hear from you. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. 238-page report on that very topic has just been released. We should probably tell you how you can get the report if you want to look at it. The cost is $10 plus $2.50 for postage and handling from the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. And their phone number is 608-263-1692. That's 608-263-1692. And that full report is also posted in a PDF format on the Academy website, wisconsinacademy.org. Again, that's wisconsinacademy.org. And our guests today, Stan Grzynski, Sandy Seiler, and Keith Langenhan, three people who know a lot about the issue, who've worked on this report, who've attended some of the forums and meetings, and who can address some of the issues. And, Stan, we were talking during the break. One of the issues that came up at just about all of these meetings was immigration.
Yes, well, and immigration was interesting because it was not on the radar screen to start with. As people were planning the forums, we're talking about production agriculture and forestry and tourism and health care and education, all the things that affect rural life. But it was interesting to note, and particularly at the last forum, which was held here in Wausau, that immigration was always raised as an issue, not just because it's a hot-button issue nationally, but because, as we learned at the forums, so much of Wisconsin agriculture is now depending on immigration labor and the work that is being done on Wisconsin farms that they simply can't find the help to do locally. So when people start talking about national immigration policy and otherwise, it isn't just a matter of the borders and securing the borders. More importantly, it's understanding that when it comes to the production of food and agriculture, it's a worldwide issue, and many of these families that are working on Wisconsin family farms are looking to do what all Americans who've come to this country have done, and that is improve their lives and try to make a contribution.
How many people are immigrants and how many people are here illegally? I mean, you can look at two different
right, and that's not for us. That's not for us to sort out. But it is important that policymakers, lawmakers, and others realize that there's no avoiding this issue. That we will not have dairying in Wisconsin. We heard this testimony over and over. Unless we understand that we need to accept the fact that there's going to be immigration labor working on those farms.
Sandy, why do you think immigrants are such an important part of the equation? You're a dairy farmer.
Mm-hmm. Well, for dairying in Wisconsin, having labor from the immigrant force is a bit of a new phenomenon, even though there are other sectors of agriculture like the fruit and crop production. The fruit and vegetable, rather, that have dealt with this of maybe 20 years longer, so they've got a better handle on it. But for people in dairying, just we know that these folks that are coming are good workers, and we need many farms really need this workforce and able to expand their operations. And we want to do the right thing, create good environments for these workers. And so we're just really looking to the policymakers so that the employers and the immigrant employees are not in this catch-22, because there are people who want to work. Farmers need the workers. So why can't we look to our policymakers to correct this?
Keith, it's obvious that a lot of farms in Marathon County depend on immigrant workers, but yet there's a move to put a wall up, a fence across the Mexican border. They're talking about throwing people in prison for employing immigrants who are here illegally. You know, you've got to deal as the Marathon on the Marathon County Board with some of the legal implications of this, as well as the economic implications as a dairy farmer.
Well, we're looking at this very seriously. The Marathon County Library System, along with the university system here, the UWMC, have went out, are in the process of going out to all of our branch libraries and doing a program on immigration. And local people that are interested, and also people that are considered immigrants, are attending these sessions, and we're finding out ways that we can serve these people and make life easier for them. More Spanish is becoming more familiar in all your rural schools, and we have to find a way to help them become more comfortable in our county.
Well, there are a lot of people saying that they shouldn't be comfortable if they're not here legally. And, you know, again, if this national debate evolves in such a way that we're going to be deporting people, what are the people who are running the farms who are depending on the labor going to do?
Well, it makes it very difficult for farmers because, you know, they can only do so much to ensure that the people that they're hiring are here legally and abiding by the rules and those sorts of things. But the problem is, in my opinion, is that the way that immigration policy is set up now, it really doesn't allow for those who legitimately want to be here to work on the farms, keep their families, some of them keep their families in Mexico, go back to those families. In other words, the way policy is, it almost invites breaking the law to get here to work. And I think a lot of this could be resolved if we dial down the emotion on it and really come to terms with the fact that we need this labor force in this country to ensure the standard of living that most Americans want.
Some people would say that you could get American citizens to do this work if you paid more for the work. People who are saying that immigration is something that's being exploited would say that farmers aren't paying enough for the labor. If you paid enough for the labor, you could hire people who weren't immigrants.
Well, that's not what we heard at the forums, and maybe Sandy or Keith, if you want to speak to it, you can. But
well,
this is an argument that's being
right.
made. You know, I'm not making this up.
No, I know I've heard the same argument, and I know in the situation for our own family farm or neighboring farms, it's difficult to find labor for the farm that's outside of the family because the hours are long, and you really love it or you're interested in doing something else in a different environment. And as more and more generations are further removed from that family farm, it seems for many people less inviting to take up that occupation, even on a part-time basis. And we need consistent laborers that are going to be there day in, day out, and for many farmers, that immigrant force provides that much-needed labor pool.
Also, a lot of farmers are struggling. Could they really afford to pay more for the labor?
Absolutely. That's been a problem for the last several years. When milk was at $12 and $13 a hundred for a long period of time, farmers could not afford to be paying $15 an hour that a lot of the force that is available here want to receive, plus health insurance, which Sandy alluded to earlier, is a problem for even the owner of the farm, much less providing it for employees. The immigrants are going to be needed for a lot more in the near future of a labor force than just in agriculture. As the baby boomers retire in this state, we are not going to have a workforce coming out of our colleges that are going to fill all the jobs that are here. We will be actually importing workforce into the state of Wisconsin in the years to come in order to fill the jobs that are available here, much outside of the agriculture field.
You know, Glenn, John Rosenow, who co-chaired the Agricultural Production Subcommittee of this report, he's a big family farmer down in the southwestern part of Wisconsin, and he depends a lot on immigrant labor. He provides health insurance for his employees. He pays them well. These aren't minimum wage jobs. And the fact of the matter is he's really taken an interest in immigration because he cannot find and keep people who want to do the constant, regular, tough, manual labor that farming calls for. And I can attest to this because I grew up on a small dairy farm. I don't think those jobs have gotten any easier. So I really think that we really need to take a look at this in from a reasonable perspective and do something about it.
There's a move in the state more and more, and this is also a national trend, toward production farming, toward bigger and bigger operations. Does that increase the need for migrant labor, or is this something that applies across the board regardless of the size of the farm?
Well, I think the increasing size and what you need to recognize, Glenn, that the farms are becoming larger, but often these are, in the state of Wisconsin, 99% of them are still family farms. They may be several families that come together, neighbors, but it looks a little bit different. But as they get larger, as families come together to have a better lifestyle, in other words, so maybe they can go to their child's Little League game or take a vacation. So now they're perhaps going to be milking three times a day. They're going to increase their herd size. There are all of these additional responsibilities that the family themselves cannot take on. And so it becomes more and more critical to have a dependable workforce that's there. And for many families, farm families in this situation that want to grow that farm so they themselves can have a better lifestyle, this immigrant workforce has been the answer, and it provides a very good lifestyle then for the worker, for these families, and it's been a very good thing for these farms.
Keith, I know you've got to leave. You've got a meeting coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes, and I just want to know if there's anything you'd like to add to the discussion before we say goodbye to you and we continue after the break.
Well, I think that we have to get all units of government and all the players together, and we have to do some planning. We have to develop a roadmap for the future as how we want to grow agriculture and preserve farmland in the state of Wisconsin. And I think that was the idea of putting together this report, and people like Stan that worked on it hard for 30 months have now identified the initiatives that we have to work on. And I commend them for doing it, and I thank our state our state leaders for putting this initiative together. And I think our future is very bright in agriculture. And I thank you for your time, Glenn. And I think this is a great hour spot for today.
Boy, we could talk all night on this. Keith Langenhan, dairy farmer from Marathon. He's also chairman of the Marathon County Board of Supervisors and chair of the Wisconsin Counties Association Agricultural Steering Committee. Keith, thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a break and continue the conversation with Stan Grzynski and Sandy Seiler. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you want to join the conversation, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
You get enough jargon and double talk in the rest of your life, why would you want it with your science news? I'm Ira Flatto. Each week on Science Friday, we skip the bogus and buzzwords and don't dumb down the big issues in science, medicine, technology, and the environment. So join me on Science Friday as we discuss science sensibly. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
The future of farming in Wisconsin. There's a 238-page booklet, 83 recommendations, and it's just been released a few weeks ago. And again, if you want to pick up on that, we'll give you the phone number and the website in just a bit. We are here with Stan Grzynski and Sandy Seiler. One of the topics we didn't talk about is rural education, which seems to be compounding the problems facing the family farm. You've got a situation where a lot of farmers are just right at above or maybe just below the poverty line. And on top of that, the school districts in rural areas are losing kids and they're losing money. A lot of the school districts are going broke. Some of them are trying to consolidate. Some of them are even looking at just closing up shop. What recommendations do we have that can address all of that, Stan?
Well, education was actually the focus of the forum that Sandy led with healthcare. But it's very interesting because what we're facing now, and you can see it already in some of the smaller counties, just north of where I live in Marinette County is Florence County, and their county's school board basically decided that they couldn't afford to maintain the school because they couldn't generate the resources. They do not have a growing population base. They have lost what little industry they have. The interesting part of it is that throughout the testimony of the future of farming and rural life, we learn that while there are many areas of the state where the school districts are very prosperous, you know, are located in prosperous areas and where there's a lot of money to do things if people are willing to do it, there are also many areas of rural Wisconsin where the loss of population, the attrition of industry, and the diminishing resources available means that this, at best, kids in those schools will not be getting an equal education, and in worst-case scenarios, they think that some of these school districts will actually have to close down or consolidate. Now, I think that we have an obligation as a state that's committed to public education to look at things like school aids formulas and resources for rural schools and put our heads together, get our leaders from our universities, from our local governments, from state government, and those who understand these issues, and bring them together and say, let's come to terms with what we know is going to be a serious problem for us, and let's start making some recommendations to allow these communities to survive.
You're talking about changing the school funding formula. Any ideas on how to do that?
Well, I have to say, Glenn, I spent 10 years in the state legislature, and it seemed to me that when it came to rural school districts, they've lost ground. And one of the reasons they've lost ground is because of changes in the school aids formula. And I don't think it's a malicious intent, but the power base in Wisconsin is not in rural Wisconsin anymore. It's in suburbia and in particularly those around the major metropolitan areas. And that political influence is being felt so that as school aids formulas are developed, there are always little ways of tweaking them so a little bit more aid goes to suburban districts for this project or that project, and we have to stop
well,
that.
Well, doesn't that become a self-fulfilling prophecy? You end up having more and more farms being subdivided into more and more subdivisions, and the process continues because the people who are calling the shots are the ones who seem to think that subdivisions and strip malls and suburban life are, well, it's something they're certainly comfortable with.
Right, and supposedly provides a future for that community. And in many communities, that works. But in my opinion, and in the opinion of many of the people who came to the forums, this can't be done without adequate planning. There ought to be development planning, land use planning, serious consideration between urban and rural areas about farmland preservation and how we can bring state and local government together to ensure we protect our resources while at the same time developing our population and an economy in a sustainable way. And that can be done. It's being done more and more now on the East Coast. Sandy can attest to that. She was out there visiting some of these locations. It's something we could do.
Yes, thank you. We were part of something called the Ultimate Land Tour. There were 50 people from Wisconsin that went to the East Coast to take a look at states of New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Maryland, where people just like us were concerned about what was happening to their farmland and their forest land, and got together and did some very creative things using private and public resources to create things like transfer of development right programs and purchase of development right. And when our 50 people came back to Wisconsin just full of ideas and very concerned, because in the state of Wisconsin, we are the leader, unfortunately, in the Midwest on the conversion of farmland, 30,000 acres a year. When we were out east, the people there, farmers like myself, locals, elected officials, told us, don't reinvent the wheel. You can learn from us. You can learn what our mistakes were, but don't wait.
And what did you learn from that tour?
What we learned is that we do have the tools here if we come together, as Stan has so eloquently said over and over, and plan. Plan is a good word. It means we can shape our destiny. We can protect this land in a way that still is able to preserve the owner's rights and pass that land down to generations and keep it in the family while having development in a way that allows communities to grow, but in a more compact, sensible way.
30,000 acres converted each year to residential, commercial, and highway development. What does that do to our environment?
Well, it puts stress on the environment, just as it puts stress on local farming operations. And as Will Rogers once said, land is in limited supply. Buy all you can. I'm sort of paraphrasing there. But I think that, you know, if we look down the road, if we want to preserve the sort of Wisconsin that we all seem to know and love and have enough space for recreation and agriculture and you know, healthy, sustainable communities, we have to start thinking seriously about how we're going to achieve that and developing the policies and the resources that allow that to happen. You know, Glenn, I want to mention one thing that came through loud and clear.
And we're going to have to wrap this up. We've only got about another minute or so here. So
I'll take 30 seconds.
Let's figure how we want to put a big bow on everything.
It came through loud and clear that people were not looking for money. What they were looking for were the tools from government to help them make good local decisions. And I think that government can provide that and can kind of take a cue from that leadership and do those sorts of things.
How do you do planning, this kind of planning, without taking people's property rights away?
Well, I don't think we should look at it as taking people's property rights away. I think we should look at it as people understanding that we live in communities, that we all rely on resources, and that if we need a certain amount of farmland to ensure that we have food production for ourselves and for the economy, that we're going to have to ensure that there's a way that those who are invested in farmland can maintain that investment.
But for a lot of farmers, that farm is their retirement. They're counting on subdividing it so that they can sell it off and get the money and move to Florida.
Well, as
that's
Sandy,
their dream.
As Sandy suggested, if we had in place a solid purchase of development rights for farmland, those who wanted to farm could farm. If you want to sell that property, you take the development rights, profits, and you can still pass that land along to other farmers who want to farm.
We have so much that we've talked about and so much that we never got to. Thank you both for being with us. We want to thank today's guests, Stan Grzynski, Sandy Seiler, and Keith Langenhan, who had to leave just a few minutes ago. A reminder, the full 238-page bound illustrated report on the future of farming and rural life can be obtained for $10 plus $2.50 for postage and handling from the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters at 608-263-1692. That's 608-263-1692. That full report, also posted in a PDF format on the Academy website, wisconsinacademy.org. Again, wisconsinacademy.org. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Kelson Quisler. Thanks to, well, our musical guest performers, John Denver, Woody Guthrie, and Louis Jordan. That's it for us. Thanks for riding with us today on these gravel roads and country trunks. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
Quack, 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 said the duck, won't you let me in? Cluck, 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 said the little red hen, let's boogie in the barnyard. Bad, bad, said the sheep from another pole. Moo, moo, said the cow, let the butter roll. Cluck, 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 said the little red hen, let's boogie in the barnyard. Yes, the barnyard was jumping. Everybody having their fling. Even old MacDonald had to do a little Connie swing. Bow wow, said the dog in the circus, top meow. Said the cat, now please don't stop. Cluck, 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 said the little red hen, let's boogie in the barnyard.